We've been talking with the leader of Democrats in the House of Representatives. Hakeem Jeffries was in the House chamber in the early morning hours of January 7th, and he listened as a clerk gave vote totals on the 15th ballot for Speaker of the House.
Of which the Honorable Kevin McCarthy of the state of California has received 216.
Kevin McCarthy stood and smiled as he finally won. The clerk also read the votes for the Democratic candidate.
The Honorable Hakeem Jeffries of the state of New York has received 212.
Jeffries stayed seated at first, but finally rose to acknowledge the applause. He is now the House Democratic leader, the successor to Nancy Pelosi, the first black leader of either party in Congress, and the minority leader whose job is to challenge Speaker McCarthy if he can. In a speech after the vote, he pledged to work with Republicans whenever possible, but also listed 26 ways he disagreed with many of them.
American values over autocracy. Benevolence over bigotry.
One for every letter of the alphabet.
People over politics. Quality of life issues over QAnon. Reason over racism.
Reaching the letter X, he said Democrats would be xenial or hospitable, not xenophobic.
So I represent one of the most diverse districts in the country.
He comes from Brooklyn in New York City, in a district with many races, religions, and nationalities. He is the son of public employees who became a corporate lawyer. He also rose in New York's bare-knuckle politics, losing races before he won. Reaching Washington, he became a manager of one of Donald Trump's impeachments. And during the trial, he quoted the Brooklyn-born rapper Biggie Smalls.
President Trump corruptly abused his power, and then he tried to cover it up. And if you don't know, now you know.
Climbing the House leadership, he edged out rivals and won support from Pelosi when she decided to step back. When we met at the Capitol, Jeffries wore a dark striped suit and sneakers. He said House rules require a jacket and tie, but do not specify the type of shoes. And we talked of his historic election.
I never expected that I would hear my name, I think, approximately 3,179 times.
People were voting for you again and again for Speaker.
Because right? People yeah. were voting.
Not that anyone was counting the exact number, but there you
Not were. That I was counting either, but I have been told that number.
We looked it up, and 3,179 was exactly the number which a person who counts votes for a living would know. Democrats united behind him.
Nancy Pelosi has consistently urged us to maintain that type of unity because it is our power.
We'll just let this finish. We stopped for a beeping sound, which echoes every so often through the Capitol complex. The bells are used to warn lawmakers when they need to show up for a vote. The power to call those votes now belongs to Republicans. Jeffries has to deal with a House Speaker he fiercely criticized for objecting to the 2020 election result.
Our orientation, our focus, our goal, our objective should be to deliver for everyday Americans. And so Speaker McCarthy and I have had, you know, some very positive forward-looking conversations about trying to figure out where we can find common ground.
I want to clarify this. A year or two back, you said McCarthy is not a serious person because he had sold himself effectively to Donald Trump. Are you saying you're now in a room with him and having productive conversations?
Kevin McCarthy was elected as the Speaker. I think he has the confidence of the overwhelming majority of his caucus, his conference, as evidenced by the fact that eventually he got there. And so I think it's our role and responsibility to make sure that we can find common ground where possible, but also simultaneously and consistently push back against extremism whenever it rears its ugly head.
It is commonly said of the House minority that because of the rules of the House that you have no real power. Is that correct? You have no real power?
Yeah, I don't believe that that is going to be the case in this current 118th Congress, in part because we're unified, we're focused, we're together. And the other side of the aisle, as we saw during the first few weeks of the year, has a wide variety of views.
Republicans have such a narrow majority they can only govern when they're nearly unanimous. But they plan to challenge President Biden's administration. Speaker McCarthy has declined to raise the federal debt limit unless the president and Democrats agree to dramatic reductions in spending.
Why wouldn't we sit down now set a budget, set a path to get us to a balanced budget, and let's start paying this debt off and make sure the future generation has as many opportunities as we do.
The White House has refused to negotiate this way, and Hakeem Jeffries says there's no reason to barter over paying U.S. government bills.
That is what the debt ceiling discussion is all about. We've incurred these bills. We need to pay them. In fact, with the debt that we have, 25% of it was incurred during the 4 years of Donald Trump's presidency.
We checked that claim that about a quarter of the $31 trillion of U.S. debt was incurred during those 4 years, and it is roughly correct.
And so, one, we're not going to be lectured about fiscal responsibility. Two, we want to make clear to the American people that the debt ceiling discussion is all about paying bills that have already been incurred. And three, we are not going to negotiate with individuals who have a gun to the head of the American people, the economy, Social Security, and Medicare by threatening to default on our debt.
Republicans think they have leverage, and they use that word. They think they have leverage because they are refusing to raise the debt limit unless you give concessions. What leverage, if any, do you have to force them off that?
Understand that when Republicans say they have leverage, what they are threatening to do is catastrophic.
Well, but what's your leverage to push them off that?
Our leverage is the debt ceiling has consistently been raised for the last 100 years. And we should not and will not default today. That is the mainstream position. That's the position that Senate Republican leader Mitch McConnell holds.
In 2011, the last time there was a big crisis over the debt ceiling, President Obama did ultimately accept a compromise. Republicans demanded restraints on spending, and both sides signed off on some long-term restraints on spending. It was a moment when there'd been a lot of government spending, and it was broadly agreed that it was okay to bring it back, to rein it in some.
But I want to announce that the leaders of both parties in both chambers have reached an agreement that will reduce the deficit and avoid default.
We are now again after a big crisis when there's been a lot of government spending and there may be a broad consensus that things need to be restrained again. Is there in fact room for some negotiation or compromise there?
Yeah, there's a difference between a compromise and a ransom note. And so let me be clear. We are not going to pay a ransom note to extremists in the other party. However, as President Biden has indicated, there's a time and a place to have a discussion about future spending. We can go through the budget process. We can go through the appropriations process. Those are the appropriate vehicles for trying to find common ground as it relates to how we spend taxpayer dollars in the future.
But are you saying we are not going to pay a ransom note? Are you saying never? You're saying, Republican, drive the car off the cliff. We are not going to grab the wheel.
We're not going to let the car go off the cliff, even though there are people who are willing to do it to try to blow up Social Security and Medicare.
Republicans have denied they want to blow up Social Security or Medicare, although it's unclear what they would cut.
No, we cannot pay that ransom note. And we will find a vehicle legislatively. We will be able to, at the end of the day, convince a handful of reasonable Republicans in the House to do what the business community throughout America have suggested needs to be done, what the U.S. Chamber of Commerce believes needs to be done, what Wall Street says needs to be done, which is to make sure we pay America's bills that have already been incurred.
For now, Jeffries has no power to force a vote. He's waiting and working to keep his caucus behind him. Some of the most progressive Democrats have distrusted Jeffries and even talked of challenging him in a primary in the past. But Jeffries insists his caucus is off to a good start, as a family, as he put it. And he's hoping that Republicans will divide before Democrats do.
You know, at the end of the day, it's important for us to have broad, comprehensive, maybe even sometimes noisy discussions about what is the right path forward for us to achieve progress for the American people, for us to lift up everyday Americans, which is why, you know, we do what we do. I mean, we run to win, we win to govern, we govern to lift people up.
Mr. Jeffries, it's a pleasure talking with you. Thank you so much.
Thank you so much.
Did we miss anything important you wanted to talk about or get anything wildly wrong?
Well, that was the first interview that I've probably done as leader where George Santos didn't come up, and I'm thankful for it. Yeah. So you got everything in.